We've been in the book of Ephesians, the Ephesians way, and we're going to continue on that. How many of you guys like reality TV? Nobody likes reality TV anymore. Good golly. All right, Michael, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I like reality TV. Hey, Annie, that's good too. I like reality TV. I know some of it's staged and whatnot, but one of the things that's not staged is Biggest Loser. Because you can't stage that, right? Here's just some pictures of before and after of these things. And these things are always amazing to me. They go through this just incredible transformation over a very short period of time. It's like a whole new person. You can follow them, and it's kind of interesting how kind of their lives go and what choices they make after that. Some of them, they choose to continue on in this physical, you know, fitness and eating correctly, and some of them choose to go back to the old ways of life. And what we're going to be looking at today, Paul goes to the Ephesians, and he puts them on a kind of a course to understand who Jesus is, that he is death, burial, and resurrection is for their salvation, to change their lives, and then he stays with them for 2.5 years. He teaches them all of these things, and they are doing well when he leaves. And then he writes this letter. And he writes this letter. Remember, he reminds them in the first three chapters, of their identity, who they are in Christ, that they are this. And now he's starting to talk about behaviors, because they've gone back to the old behaviors. They have new hearts, but old habits kind of have crept back in. Same thing with the Biggest Losers. I think they have new hearts in many ways. Like, they know what to do, they understand what to do, but sometimes those old habits come back and they become a part of. And that's what we're going to be looking at today. Remember, the Ephesians, they're on the Aegean Sea. It's a major trade community. It's probably the third or fourth largest city of the time. Paul's there for 2.5 years. He speaks to both the Jewish people. He speaks to the Gentiles. And he is there trying to help them to understand who Jesus is and to walk with him and what that actually means. And so today we have some questions that we're going to be asking. And there was radical change, I believe, in the Ephesians when Paul was there. But that radical change began to stop. And so a question for us, some of you have been followers of Jesus for a very long time, is your story compelling? Really what I'm asking in that is this, does Jesus actually make a difference in your life anymore? Does he make a difference in your life? Because that was a problem with the Ephesians and what we're going to be looking at today. If you work better with maybe kind of outlines in your hand, in your minds, the first few verses that we're going to be looking at is in chapter 4 and verse 17 and through 19. And really it's just talking about the walk of the old you. And then the next one is the walk of the new you. And that's kind of an old school term that I'm using, the walk, because we don't live in a culture really that walks that much. Maybe if you're a college student, you walk to classes, those types of things. If I live on Bramer Road, I may walk to the Huberts if they invite me. But other than that, I don't really walk that much on our road. There's nowhere to go, really. You can go to the Huberts, or you can go down the road a little bit to maybe the Christian school and play on the playground. Other than that, there's not really anywhere to walk. You can't go to the store. It'd be a very long walk to go to the store or anything like that. We don't live in that culture, but they did live in that culture. And so when he starts to talk about this idea of walk, are you walking in a way that is your old self, or are you walking in a way that is your new self and what God has called you into? And so that's what we're going to be unpacking today and really going, does Jesus actually matter? There's really a before and after pictures in these verses. And so he says this in verse 17. So I tell you this, and he insists on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. And they continue to want more. Now, the church that Paul was writing to were made up of people that were both Jewish background, They were raised with the Ten Commandments. They were raised with the law. And it was also made up of people who were Gentiles. These were people that were not raised with the Ten Commandments. They were not raised in the Jewish synagogue. They came from all sordid past. And I think Paul's probably talking to both of them, but he's using the Gentiles as an example here for them to see some certain things. And he says, I plead with you that this old you, that you need to break away from this, the way of the Gentiles live. And then he throws down statement after statement. The hardening of your heart, the separation from God, the darkening of your hearts. And then he finally gets to verse 19, and he says, having lost all sensitivity. And he's saying, hey, this doesn't even disrupt your soul anymore. This used to, what you're doing doesn't disrupt who you are anymore. And you become really numb to these things. This disconnect from God, this disconnect from the way that you were taught. Remember, they weren't called Christians back then. They were called the way. And the way was to follow what Jesus had for them. And he's saying, hey, you're no longer in this way. You're walking in the old way. And stop that, because it's not going to produce what you think it's going to produce. And you've lost your sensitivity toward this. Part of it is that we need to understand what it meant to be Greek to really understand the context of what he's talking about here, and to understand what he's trying to communicate. Because their society, some things were just normal. It just was a part of what they did and who they were and how they operated. And so they were going back into this thing that was very normal to them. It was very normal to the other people. And so we're going to do a little history lesson really quick here. And they had a kind of a theater culture. And the theater was born out of a festival to the god Dionysus. And he was the god of what? Wine, right? He was god of wine. What happened during this spring festival is that there would be a singing competition. And these people would come from different places, and they would come, and they would entertain, and they would sing, you would drink wine. And you drink wine, and you drink lots of wine, and you would enjoy this music. It was kind of the first American Idol. It was, you know, and then you'd pick kind of a winner out of this. It was a prototype to the American Idol. And this sometimes, as it evolved, they started to bring acts to it. And so it wasn't just singing. There was some other type of theatrical thing that was going on. And in these songs began to become almost like musicals. And this was kind of the birth of the theater. And yet this was all birth in a festival that was connected to wine. And so in Ephesians 5:18, Paul tells them, so this becomes a drinking culture. It becomes something that is very normal to what they do. And he says in verse 18 of chapter 5, he says, do not get drunk on wine, which leads to debauchery, all kinds of excess. Instead, be filled with the Spirit. These people drank heavily, and it led to all kinds of things that were not a part of the way. He's not saying never drink or any of that. He says, hey, don't become drunk with wine in this. And then there is this other thing that was a part of their culture, and it's a symposium culture, or a Greek culture that is based off of this idea of symposium. When we think symposium, we think of many intellectuals sitting around talking about the day's politics and things of that nature, right? That's kind of what we think when we think of symposium. And it's a think tank. It's a way of sharing ideas and thoughts. And it was that at some level, but it actually wasn't the basis of it. It was actually really to go together and to drink, and to drink at least to a place where things became much more open and free. Sim means together, po means drink, so it means drink together. And you would probably start off by drinking, and you would have maybe a glass of wine, and you would talk about the current events of the day, or maybe some philosophical thought that you had heard or understood, but it was round after round of drinks. And the objective here was to keep up with the host. That was what was polite. And so if the host was drinking, here's a picture of it. I think this is probably a part of the tame part of it. They're sitting around, they're talking, there's maybe a little entertainment going on, and we'll talk about that in just a second, what was happening within there. And this is just a picture of what they would be doing there. There was actually drinking games that came out of it. They had this dregs game, which there was like a bell. And so wine wasn't filtered like our wine is filtered. And so there would be dregs in the bottom of your glass. And you would take those dregs and you would go, whoosh, and you would try to ding a bell. And it was kind of like darts with wine. And so there was drinking games and there was entertainment and there was talking. But it was really leading to a place. And this is normal in their culture. This is normal in who they are. There were also these, and you'll see it in there, there's a person with kind of a towel on, and they were often slaves, or they were accomplished call girls. And they would offer their services in entertainment. First, when you're in the early stages, there would be entertainment that was them singing or whatever, and then it led to some other types of entertainment that were we'll just call it other because I think you get the picture of what was going on, right? And so there were other types of services as the at the end of the evening. This one doesn't, and if you type in symposium, Greek symposium into, and look for images, you'll see a little bit different picture, and you'll see children running around without clothes on. They were the servers. And they would bring the wine, they would bring the drinks, and then they would provide other services. This is the culture that Paul is speaking into. This is the culture that he is talking to. And you go, that is horrible, that is terrible, but it's normal there. This was normal for them. This was a part of Greek life. It was a symposium culture. There was a comedy written by Eubulus. And you don't take all of your historical understanding from comedies, but if you watch a comic on stage, why we laugh at the things that they're saying, sometimes they're saying things over the top, but there's an amount of truth to what they're saying, right? And that's why it's funny to us. In the same way, he writes about this, and he says, the first bowl was a celebration of Dionysus. Second bowl is for health. He's talking about wine. Third and fourth and fifth were for fun. Then one for sexual, a free for all. Then there were black eyes. Then the police are called before the place is trashed. And while we look at this and we go, wow, this is not really funny to us maybe, but for them that was funny. But there was some amount of truth to that. The author, Cahill, he talks about this and he talks about the life and he comments on a poem that was a part, and this was part of the entertainment, was this poem that was kind of laid out in these little sections. And he says this: there's sadness beneath the merriment. It is as if no matter how much these revelers sing, dance, howl, recite their jokes, and then he says, have relations with one another. I won't use the term he does. It is actually on the bottom of your sermon notes. A constant authoritative note of pessimistic pain sounds beyond all their frantic attempts not to hear it. What Cahill is saying is they look at this play and they go, now that's life. Like, that's funny. Symposium culture, that's really when we're having the best time possible. This is just awesome. And they watch this and they want to be a part of this and they want to live in this. And yet they don't understand the emptiness, and there's this pessimistic pain that is always there and underlying the note of all of these parties. It would be like us watching Jersey Shore. It seems like, oh man, look at all the fun they're having. They're going out, they're doing this. They look good, you know. know, they're doing all of this stuff, and yet there is this pain that lies underneath the emptiness of what they're actually trying to achieve. We have another a reality show called Real World. Does that even go on anymore? I don't even know that. Does it go on anymore? Does anybody know that? There's like 20 seasons of this when they put a bunch of people together and they live together, and it looked really fun, but then it became like this other thing that everyone was trying to achieve and trying to get to and trying to be. It was very Greek culture-like. And what he's saying is the symposium culture, there's an amount of pain underneath it that they don't even know, because they're living in it and they're a part of it, and it looks like it's something that they want, and yet it leads to emptiness. There's pain in this. Cahill is not a Christian author. He wrote Why Greeks Matter, and he's a secular author, and he's seen the depravity of that culture and the depravity of the symposium culture. And I think what Paul is talking about, and let's circle back to verse 17, he's saying, so I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Futility is a word that is used that means emptiness. They're living in emptiness. They're living in something else that they think is going to produce something that is not going to produce what they believe it's going to produce. They're darkened in their understanding, separated from the life of God because of their ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. And he begins to say, hey, that there's darkness here. And the way that you were walking, the way that they were walking prior to understanding who Christ was, this is how you're entering back into. This is what you're looking for to provide life. And I've shown you that the life is found in Jesus Christ, that you follow him, you walk with him. And when your heart becomes hardened, when Jesus is no longer the Lord of that, what happens in there is that your heart really becomes numb to these other things, and you go back to this old habit. New heart, old habits. And he's addressing this. It's empty to them, and he wants them to understand this. And then, having lost all sensitivity, they're giving themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. What he says is all sensitivity. You no longer feel a proper human emotion. Think about that symposium culture, kids running around, high-end call girls, objectifying people, looking out for yourself, looking out for a good time. And he says you're no longer, it numbs you out. There's no shame in this. They're full of greed and they want more. It's a vortex that they go more, more, more. And this, it sucks them in. There's this longing, this thirst to get deeper and darker and really probably weirder. We look at this and we go, we don't have that really, you know? I'm probably a couple places in the world you could do that, and it would it, you could. But, dudes, how many times are you one click away from living in the symposium culture? Thinking this is going to provide something for you that it doesn't. And Paul is going, man, this is empty. Don't do this. This is an old habit. You need a new habit. And that new habit is to clothe yourself with Christ. And it's not just about good, bad, shame, those types of things. It's about something that is a different way of life. It is one that produces something. It's not just behavior. It's this is who you are, remember. This is who you're, a child of God. These are the values. And if you live by the values, there's great benefits for you. And he starts to speak into this, and we see this and we go, what in the world? Like, we don't understand this, but I don't think we're that far off again. I don't think that we're that different from the Greek cultural mindset, and we become numb to the things of God. What he says, I plead with you to not live like Gentiles, really away from God. Basically, you're talking about people who had a new heart, but they were people who had old habits. He's writing to the church people, and he's going, that is your past. That is not your future. That is the old you. You have a new you. That is who you were. That's not who you are becoming. And what happens What happens in when you say yes to Jesus, the Spirit of the living God comes inside of you, and he indwells you, and he starts to change things in you, and he does an extreme makeover in you. And they're saying they're numb to what's going on in that. They're numb to the Spirit moving and changing their lives. And I wonder, I just submit, where are we numb? Where are we living this Greek symposium culture in our lives, in our hearts? It's not about, I'm good, so I get a little check mark. It's about a new heart that is changed by the living God that goes, no, that's not for me. That leads to a hardened heart toward God. That leads to emptiness. I want life, and I want life to the full that Jesus promises. Like, where are those places? Remember, Paul spent 2.5 years instructing these people in the way. And he writes in this next section, in verse 20, "You, however, did not come to know Christ that way. Surely you heard of him and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that it is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off the old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness." Remember, Paul spent 2.5 years instructing these people in the way, so that he's having this talk. We've talked about this. This isn't going to lead to where you want to go. And it wasn't a quick fade, I don't think, because this is probably 6 to 8 years after he was there. And it was a slow fade back into this normal culture. And he's saying, now your hearts are numb. I think the Ephesians Christians would stand outside the symposium, and they knew it was wrong. Man, this is wrong. It uses people. This leads to the hardening of your heart. It leads to being numb emotionally. It doesn't lead to life, but there's death found in this. And I think they knew this. And yet, there was something intoxicating about it. There's something that sucked them back in. There's something that said, come and be a part of this. The first image he uses there is the old self in verse 22. Then he said, to be made new in attitude of your minds, to put on the new self, to be created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. There's three concepts here. I need a new mind, but it's not just a new mind. I need a new man. I need a new person. I need to be new and born into Christ and to put off and to put on. It sounds a lot like changing clothes, right? He says there's an entirely new set of behaviors. There's an entirely new way of what, who's going to guide your dress. What you're going to look like that day, what you're going to put on. Your desires, those desires are deceitful. You're going to think you look good, and you're going to walking toward goodness and holiness as you live in this symposium culture. It's going to give you what you want. And Paul says, no, it's empty. Don't do that. Let God clothe you. Let God clothe you with his righteousness and his holiness, and watch what it does. It's not about being, look at, I am good and pious, because they had Jewish people that were good and pious and all of those things. What it's about is that God is changing them and molding them, and they're walking in the way that actually gives them life. They're created, they're new creations in this. I wonder what Paul would say to us. I don't think anybody went to a symposium last night. I don't think he did. And it wouldn't have looked like a Greek one, because that would be illegal here. But I wonder what he would say to us. Would he talk about us living in that old way of relationship with people? Would he talk about our achievement culture? Like we're always trying to get ahead, and sometimes we miss out on just loving and caring about people because we're trying to ascend. Would he talk to people who are not married and who are living in biblical relation with somebody they shouldn't be living with? Right? Would he talk to that? Would he talk to the affairs of our hearts that happen? Maybe through the internet, maybe there are people having an affair. Would he say, man, you made this covenant, this is the new way. I know marriage is hard, but stay in it, work through it, walk through it. Would he say, this is the new way? What would he say to us? Man, some of you guys got in that old way, you got a big mouth. And you like to gossip and you like to tell things, and I know that's intoxicating and it's fun and it makes you feel like you're important and makes you feel like you're connected to your friends, but you need to shut your mouth and talk about other things or figure out how to talk about other things. You need to renew your mind. What would he say to us? And some of you are angry, and he would say, hey, like, you know what? That anger, you need to explore where that's coming from. Not you shouldn't be frustrated with things at times, but if it's the sum of the clothes that you put on all the time, maybe that's not for you. Maybe you need to shut off your Fox News or your CNN or whatever's making you angry and calm down and get into the Word and allow God to renew your mind. Maybe, you know what, is it Romans 2? It's one of them where it talks about renewing of your mind. I was reading that, and it gives you a whole list under there, and this one's for free. It's not in my notes. It talks about hospitality. And it's part of renewing your mind. And I thought, that's interesting, right? Maybe some of you need to invite somebody over for dinner. Huh? Maybe that's what he's saying. Like, hey, I know you're going to think you need to clean your house and do all of this stuff, but man, maybe it's just about relationship. Maybe it's just about connecting with people. Maybe it's just like, this is going to produce something in you that you're all have all of these fears that you're going to judge, that you're going to be judged by these people, and maybe I'm going to walk through this with you, and you're just going to have this incredible time of connecting with your brothers and sisters, or maybe just a neighbor that doesn't even know God yet, and I'm going to be there with you, and it's going to be awesome. Maybe that's what he's telling you. I don't know what he would say to us. Those are just some of my thoughts. I think oftentimes what we do is we put on, we don't even know. And I think the Ephesians, remember, these people, this was written to the church. These were people who knew who Jesus was. They had committed their lives to him. They were baptized and born into the family of God. These were people who knew the truth of the gospel. And yet they were numb to the things of God. And I think oftentimes we don't even know that were numb to it. I think they probably didn't know. They were like, "Oh, I'm just going with my buddies, and I'm going to go hang out in the symposium culture, and I'm going to do this, or I'm going to build my body in such a way, and not care about my heart." Remember, the Greek culture was all about appearance, and it was all about building the body and making it. And it's not wrong to do that, but it became something for them that was just about vanity, not about holiness. Maybe I'm going to use this relationship or that relationship. I'm going to let, like, what would he talk to us about? And what I think happens for us is that we all, the Ephesians and the Evangelites, we often don't even know that it's happening, and our hearts become hardened, our hearts become dark, because we're not seeking after what Jesus has for us. And we exchange something that will provide emptiness for something that could provide so much more. One of my favorite stories from college, I had two roommates. And one of the roommates went out, and I won't use their name. I'm going to call them Fred and Bill, because you may know these people. So Fred went out, and he bought some new shorts and new shirt, and he had a date the night before. And so he went out and he came back home, and he took his clothes off and he threw his shorts on his, he was kind of a slob, but he threw his shorts on his clean clothes pile. And so Fred does that. Bill comes in, and Bill has a date the next night. And Fred was at work, and so he couldn't ask him, and he thought, man, those shorts look really cool. I'm going to wear those. And so he puts the shorts on and puts a shirt on, and he takes off for his date. And so we're sitting there, Fred and I, and waiting for Bill to come home, and not really waiting for him. We were playing video games. And he comes home, and we said, well, how'd the date go? And this is what we see. Not so good. And he goes, you know how my air conditioning doesn't work that well? There's not a good air exchange. He's like, the girl was sitting next to me, and all of a sudden she goes, it kind of smells like vomit in here. And he said, then I looked at my shorts, the shorts that he borrowed from the other roommate, and there was a big blob of vomit. And he goes, oh yeah, I got sick last night, and I threw up on my shorts. And the other dude wore them on a date, and it smelled horrible. So they were really mad. And he said, why did you put them on your clean clothes? And he goes, well, I was going to wash them. I think this is sometimes how we treat our Christian lives. We look over here and we go, oh, I'm going to throw those shorts on. And we walk with this clothing that looks okay, and it looks okay to everyone else, but it has a stench to it. It has a smell to it that is not of God. And what Paul is talking about here is putting on this new clothes. How do we do that? What does that look like? It looks like this. It looks like calling sin, sin. It looks like going, man, those shorts aren't clean over there. I'm not going to go and put those on, right? It's the old self. They look good. It looks enticing, but they lead to something else. You're a gossip, and it seems fun, and people like you, but what does it lead to? It leads to broken relationships and gossip about you. You're not honest at work. And you get credit for things that are boost your ego, and you think to yourself, well, I deserve to be happy. But it leads to other people going, man, that guy's a fake, or that person's a fake. Maybe some of you drink too much, and it's fun, but it leads to fighting, loose living, and pain. The reason that God told us how to live is because it leads to life. It's not a set of rules. But it's not about empty living. You were once slaves to self. You were only looking to please self. And which seems right, but it ends up being empty. And Paul says, put on the new self. Put on the new clothes. Wash the old clothes off. The stench of the old life. Put those in the trash. And there's new life as a child of God. Here's the reality. Sin has no power over you. Has no power over us. Because of Jesus and the cross. When Jesus Christ died on the cross, he cried out, my God, why have you forsaken me? It was because of my sin. It was because of your sin. And they were all on his back, separating us from him, separating us from the Father. And for the first time in history, the Father turns his face away. But now, because of what Jesus did, and our righteousness is given to us through that, this new clothing, our pardon has been paid. Our sin has no longer power over us. Those who belong to Christ have been crucified, the sinful nature with its passions and desires. Jesus was crucified so your sin and my sin would not have power over us. God sent his Spirit so we could put on, he could tell us how to dress, how to behave, that would lead to life that is sinful. That's what Paul is addressing in this section. He's going to go into more detail in the next chunk. And we're going to get into no unwholesome talk, those types of things. And he's going to give that to us. But for now, I just want us to pause just for a moment. Close our eyes. And just ask. Maybe there is nothing. Maybe you are just living in this new life. But maybe you just ask. Band, you can come. Maybe you just ask this question. Does Jesus really matter in my life today? Does his way really matter in my life today? Not just for eternal salvation. That's awesome and good. But does he matter today? Am I living in this presence with him? Is there something that I'm numb to that he wants me to lay down? Maybe for you, it's the busyness of life that is causing you actually broken a relationship. Or maybe relationships with your kids that are broken. Maybe for you, it's overcommitting and those types of things. Others, maybe it's something else that you just are just not seeing. And there's just not that closeness to God. And you're going, man, I don't know if he does make a difference. The Ephesians got to a place where they looked no different. And it's not just about outward appearance, but their hearts weren't different because they were hardened to the things of God. And I wonder today, is there something that you just need to confess? Is there something that you just need to say, not out loud, but in the quietness of your heart? God, this is where I'm at. I'm struggling with this. God, we come before you and we humbly submit. Now, we don't always put on the Jesus clothes. There are places in our life, God, that your spirit needs to change. Where sin has entered in and we think it's good and we want it and we want to hold to it. And yet you're calling us out of it to this new life. Not for us to earn our way to you. We've already have that through the work of Christ. But so that we can live. God, thanks for loving us so much. Thanks for telling us the truth. Thanks for empowering us through the work of the cross to not be held down by our sinful desires, but to be able to give those to you freely. God, I ask that your spirit would work in our hearts, that this sermon wouldn't be the point, but it truly would be the push toward transformation to this life that you promised, that we would have these new clothes and we would wear them well. Thanks for loving us. Thanks for Jesus. Amen.